You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
What's up, Launch Streeters? I guess I should say good morning. And I have to tell you, I am sitting in my home office with my cup of coffee, looking outside, it's all windows, at the snow coming down, and it is so peaceful and beautiful. I don't know. There's something about the quiet of the snow that makes me super productive. Are you like that? I know, it's the weirdest thing. All right, let's get into innovation. So as consumers, which we all are, right? We all buy things, personal, professional, groceries, clothing, homes, stuff for work, whatever it is. We pay a lot for convenience. We want it faster at our doorsteps, easier to handle. You get the point. I mean, I pay for things to come overnight. I pay to not have to go inside the grocery store, which, by the way, not because I don't love the grocery store. I could get lost in there for hours, but because I don't have the time. So ultimately, at least for me, convenience is about getting my time back. But the question becomes, how do we innovate in a world driven by speed and ease? Because let's face it, I could get it to you overnight and then the competition could get it to you same day. Turns out, in a lot of ways. Inside Launch Street guest Shep Hyken shows why disruption and loyalty are important to success and how to innovate in a customer-oriented world, which we are all in, no matter our job titles. It's the entire business's responsibility to serve our customers, whether that's the general public, whether that's another business, whether that's, by the way, internal customers that we serve. So we dig into the six principles in his book, The Convenience Revolution, and how to implement them to innovate, create that loyalty, and stand out. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Shep. Shep Hyken is the Chief Amazement Officer at Shepherd Presentations, an award-winning keynote speaker, and New York Times and Wall Street Journal best-selling business author. He's one of the leading experts in the field of customer service and experience, and he works with companies who want to build loyal relationships with their customers and employees. Now, his book, the one we're digging into, just came out in October of 2018. It's The Convenience Revolution, How to Deliver a Customer Service Experience That Disrupts the Competition and Creates Fierce Loyalty. Now, the one thing I know you're now wondering is, what is Shep's innovator archetype? Well, Shep is a futuristic collaborative, and you're going to hear that in how he talks about the trends and pushing into the future and applying what he's learning today to create success tomorrow, because that's what you futuristics do. You actually live in Tomorrowland. You're able to create tomorrow's opportunities, and you'll hear that in how Shep talks about the six principles in his book. And you'll hear him talk about his collaborative side, which is really about how he gathered the data and pulled those disparate pieces and ideas and experiences and conversations together to understand those patterns and principles. It's really a powerful combination when you use it and perform at your peak. All right, let's dig into this.
Shep, thank you so much for joining me today. What a great day to have a conversation with you.
It is my pleasure. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, Shep. So I know you a little bit, but you're new to our audience. So what's the one thing they would be surprised to learn about you?
Oh, wow. I say one thing, but it has several answers. That I have lots of interesting interests. And that includes I do magic a little bit, you know, in part of my speech, but a big hobby. I still practice my card tricks. I do music. I play guitar. I play hockey 2 to 3 days a week when I'm in town. Ice hockey still, even at this age, with a bunch of old guys. We're slower than we used to be, but it's great. Golf, tennis, and I have a wife and 3 kids. There you go.
Wow.
That's a big answer.
So let me ask you about the magic, because I'm always curious about hobbies like that where you really do have to practice to do the hobby. Mm-hmm. What keeps you motivated with everything else you have going on? And I know you travel a ton. So what keeps you motivated to practice magic?
Well, so just so you know, I practice every day, almost every day. And just in my office, I have a deck of cards and some coins, and I'm always practicing. I'm on the phone. I'm talking to people. My hands are moving. Same thing with the guitar. I go home at night. It's the way I completely, you know, separate myself from work. And it's really cool. All of these things activate the other side of my brain. So there's a lot of motivation to do it. When people leave at the end of the day, for example, I pick up my guitar and I play for 20 minutes and then I go back to work like totally refreshed. But the magic, you're right, to keep good at it, you have to practice it. But interestingly, if you don't perform in front of people, you'll lose the edge of the entertainment. So I still like to get in front of people and occasionally do a card trick at a party.
Well, I'll look forward to the next party we're both at.
I'll be
then.
The life of the party. No, I know. I'll be off the corner doing a card trick for a buddy.
That's right. I'll make sure to bring my deck of cards just in case I run into you.
Awesome.
So let's tell launch readers so they have a little bit of context. Why are you so passionate about customer service and business?
Well, first of all, it's what I grew up with. It's what I was taught when I was 12 years old and I did my first birthday party magic show. My mom made me go write a thank you note, which was my first lesson in customer service. And my dad told me to call and thank them again, the parents that hired me, and make sure that they were happy with the show. Mm-hmm. Another lesson. He asked me to get specific feedback, and that's what that was about. What tricks did they like and not like? And if they didn't mention a trick, just assume that it wasn't memorable and try to replace it with a more memorable trick. Little did I know, you know, process improvement, that's all customer service. And then I started becoming passionate, even at the age of 12 and 13, of making sure the parents were comfortable. Like a week before, I'd call and say, remember, I'm coming and I just want to make sure I have all the details. That made them feel comfortable. I learned not to show up just on time, but to show up earlier than on time so they wouldn't be looking at their watch wondering if I was ever going to show up. So those are the kinds of things I was taught. And I think it's just part of who I am. I want to make sure things are done right and I want to make sure people are happy.
So I'm going to fast forward us. Will you define customer service or customer experience? Because I think it is one of those words that it's a little bit like innovation in my space that everybody uses. And sometimes people have different definitions of. So what's yours?
Sure. And that's a great question. And depending on what day you ask me, I might give you a different answer. Well, and there is a difference between customer service and customer experience.
Tell me about the difference too.
Yeah. Well, customer service is typically people interacting with people. A lot of people think it's a department. I believe it's not a department. It's a philosophy that is to be, you know, embraced by everybody in a company, from the CEO to the most recently hired, to someone in the mailroom, to somebody in the warehouse, to somebody that's on the front line. And it's all about taking care of the person you work with, whether they're an outside customer or an internal customer. So it's the interaction and managing that interaction. You know, and sure, some of that is the customer service department where we service people when they have questions and problems. But if everybody had the philosophy of taking care of who they work with and doing it in such a way, that's what's customer service. It doesn't matter, internal or external customer, you're going to create this amazing culture. Now, over the years, this word experience started to pop up. And in the beginning, customer experience was just another fancy word for customer service. But now, experience is everything. Any interaction, any touch point, any impression that's made, and it could be, think about it. Do you remember, I don't know what kind of a mobile phone you have, but is it an iPhone by chance?
Yeah,
okay.
It is.
Do you remember the first one you ever received when you went to the store and they hand you this box?
Yeah.
And you open up the box and you go, holy cow, this is cool. And you haven't even turned on the phone yet. You know?
Yeah, the whole thing was amazing.
Yeah, and same thing with the iPod that they had and everything. It's like the packaging is part of the experience. When you hit the, you know, buy button with Amazon or you know, the airlines you work with, and you immediately get an email back that says, we received your order. That's part of the experience. That creates confidence. And so every interaction that you have, as well as people to people and the general service that you receive, well, that's part of customer experience as well.
I want to go back to what you said about customer service being more of a mindset or a philosophy, and that it should be embraced by everyone. How do you, or maybe you have some examples, how do you set that up and really embrace it for people internally? Because I think it's very easy when you're dealing with actual, like the external customer. I mean, money is on the line in a lot of places, or they're frustrated or they're happy with a product or service. But when you're internal in a company and you don't have that I don't know if it's motivation or consequence. How do you build that internally? Because I love what you're saying. I just want us to figure out, well, how do we make that happen for the people who aren't on the front lines?
Yeah. So let me give you an example, and then I'll give you how to go about doing it. So let's say you're located in Denver, Colorado, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to come and visit me in St. Louis, Missouri.
Yes, I am.
And you decide you're going to check luggage.
Okay.
Okay. So you go to the airport, you check your luggage, and you see it going down the conveyor belt. And a couple, 3 hours later, you're in St. Louis, Missouri, and there it is at the baggage carousel. How many people behind the scenes that you never saw and who never saw you touched your bag to make sure it got to where it's supposed to go?
I don't know, probably half a dozen, if not more.
At least. I mean, they picked up the bag, they scanned it, they put it on the right cart. Somebody drove the cart out to the right airplane.
And in two different cities, really.
Right, right. And exactly. Once it lands, the reverse action takes place. So there's all these people that absolutely have huge impact on your customer experience, but will never, ever see you. And they need to recognize that what they do is just as important as somebody on the front line dealing directly with you when you go to the ticket counter, you're taken care of by the flight attendant. So how do we get these people to understand that? You know, it's the guy in the warehouse that says, I never see a customer. What does it matter if I give good customer service? Well, if I order something and you don't put it in the box the right way and it shows up damaged, you've destroyed my experience with the company. And it was your fault, even though we never met, we never talked, you never saw me. So what we do is we take people through the traditional journey mapping exercise. And this is an overused term these days, but it's an appropriate one. And that is the map of what your interactions are with your typical customers. And there might be various journeys, the first time customer, repeat customer, what is a customer experience when there's a problem? You know, there's different journeys. But the point is you map those out and you identify every one of those points of contact. Then you go deep into the company and you say, what behind the scenes impacts all of those points? So let's say we create a journey map of a customer that goes into a grocery store and that customer has to use the bathroom. Well, that's part of the interaction they have with your company. They go in the bathroom and is it clean? Is there toilet paper? Does everything work? Well, somebody's responsible for keeping that clean. It's just not an interaction. It's behind the scenes. There's somebody that has impact on that experience. So we create the touch points at the top. We identify those. And then we create and identify the impact points that are happening behind the scenes, things that customers don't necessarily see but experience. So when you do this properly, there will be no department left out of this impact experience. Thereby, everybody within a department has some impact on the customer experience. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love it. And I was just thinking for launch treaters out there listening, I love this idea of creating a map and really understanding, if I hear you right, Chef, it's really, let's say I'm the person inside, the company, like I'm the baggage guy at the airport, understanding how my one action in that one moment where nobody's looking and nobody sees me and I never even hear the customer actually impacts, 10, 20 steps downstream. Right. When it actually goes out the door in some way, which is true for any business of any kind. In that kind of concept or that philosophy, everybody touches the customer in some way. Just some of them do it directly.
Yep. And it's really interesting that sometimes the people behind the scenes, and I know innovation's big with your listeners, people behind the scenes could have the biggest impact on innovation, even though they never see the customer. And here's why. Some of what they're doing, they just do because that's the way they were taught to do it. And then they come up with a better way and they don't tell anybody about it. They don't share it. Or maybe a manager doesn't foster the innovative concept and doesn't bring that out in people. And I think it's really a shame. So sometimes somebody on the inside of an organization may have an idea to streamline a process simply because they question, why am I doing it this way? Why not another way?
I think what you said in there, one of the things that you said that was so important is that, somebody figured out a better way to do it. They're doing it and nobody else knows. There's all these hot spots of innovation.
Well. Right. So we have in our business, we have a concept we call moments of innovation. So I talk about moments of magic, which are positive customer experiences, moments of misery that are negative. But a moment of innovation is what we call basic service creativity and process improvement. And I call, like, when we do this on the front line at the top of that journey map and all these touch points. We talk about service creativity. We look at every one of those touch points and say, where can I make this better? Is there a better way to answer the phone? Is there, you know, so how do we, what happens when the phone is, you know, a customer calls? Well, you know, the machine picks up and says, push one for this, two for that, three for that. You know, is there a better way we can do that? Well, sure there is. Go back to the original way people used to talk to each other. Hi, can I help you? Yes, I'd like to speak to somebody in sales. Hold on, I'll connect you. You know, and it's like that, you know, today I love it. I laugh when I listen to people in the office next to me and they're screaming, agent, representative.
Because if you say it louder.
I know, they can't get out of that phone, you know, interactive voice response system or whatever it's called. Anyway, practicing service creativity, and that happens behind the scenes as well. It's so important. So what we do every week, I go through phases where I do this and ask people, like, this month, every week, I expect you to bring to our weekly meeting your moment of innovation. And I'll give you an example. Somebody in my office just said to me, Shep, you know, we have these headphones, and for whatever reason, she does all our video work. You know, it's not that I need a better set of headphones. It's the jack that's the problem. And I looked at it and I said, well, I can understand why. We have an adapter on it. I wonder, and she was already a step ahead of me. She pulled up on the screen. Look at these. Every one of them has the quarter inch jack. It's not an adapter to the quarter inch jack where you have to put on something, or, you know, around the around the eighth inch jack. And I said, and so you're saying, I'm saying we need one of these. It will make my job easier, better, everything. I go, moment of innovation. She goes, oh, I guess it is, isn't it?
It is sometimes all the little things too. They really add up.
Yeah. And maybe you've got a better way of doing something, and that needs to be recorded, which is why everybody writes on an index card their moment of innovation. And once it's accepted, that's a great idea. Then they actually write it up, you know, in a sheet, and it goes into our process manual. We have a manual we use for everything. And that way, if somebody is out of like just something as simple, and now this is more process than innovation, but if somebody's out and nobody's ever done a FedEx package before, we can open our book and say, oh, this is how to do it. We follow it step by step. But the innovation idea is, if there's a better way of doing something, we change the method.
So I'm going to ask you a question, Shep, that's going to sound very naive, but I don't like to be assumptive, and I think it's a conversation actually worth having. Why is, in today's business world and kind of how competitive and the rate of change, all that stuff, why is innovation in customer service so important?
Well, at the end of it all, nothing has changed from the standpoint a customer, they're upset, they have a problem, or they just have a question and want some help. And then at the end of the interaction, they go, okay, this was good. Nothing's changed as far as that go, but everything in the middle has changed. The multiple ways that customers communicate with a company, the many different techniques that we can use to create a better experience. Many of them are digital and technology driven. And a lot of people think that innovation is about technology. Sometimes it is, but not always. You know, it could just be a better way of doing anything, you know, but the idea is to answer your question that, and I think I've already lost track of what the question is. Here I go. I'm going down this little
rabbit hole. Innovation and customer service, because I think we think of them as two separate departments, functions. But, you know, the examples you're just giving were making me think about, you know, it. In my perspective and in my work, it really business innovation is about business and across all everything that happens in a business. And I wanted to hear from your perspective kind of why it's so important in that customer service realm too.
Sure. So what's happened is, like I say, the ends haven't changed, but the middles have.
Yeah.
And if you look at what's happened is that companies have figured out better ways for the customer, meaning typically of a no more friction or less friction or a more convenient solution, an easier solution. Maybe they're using technology. Maybe they're just making the process simpler by eliminating a step. But I think about so many great ways that companies are, you know, using apps to communicate with customers and maybe allowing them to go on and get an, you know, well, I know we're probably going to talk about my new book. At least I hope we are.
Maybe we'll see.
And one of the things we talk about is how technology can help drive convenience. When PayPal decided to come around and go, hey, we're going to come up with a way for people to transfer money quicker. They could do it on their computer. They don't have to go to the bank anymore. They don't have to send a check anymore. This is how you're going to do it. And once you're set up, it's going to literally take you under a minute to transfer money to the other side of the country, if not the world. So pretty cool innovation. And a lot of times what innovation does, not always, but many times, especially as it applies to customer service and experience, it makes it easier for the customer, which many times means saves them time,
right,
eliminates step, gets rid of friction. It's all these different concepts of eliminating friction and, again, yeah, making it a convenient experience.
I do want to go into your book next, The Convenience Revolution, How to Deliver a Customer Service Experience That Disrupts the Competition and Creates Fierce Loyalty. And we'll put a link to it in the show notes. Before we dig into it, will you start with a story of someone who you think is out there doing exactly what you're talking about here? And then I want, like I said, I want to dig into some of the points in the book.
Sure. So, I mean, I could tell you a story, but think about what's the most convenient company on the planet.
Well, Amazon right now.
Amazon, right. Yeah. I think they have done it. And in the book, I describe six convenience principles, and Amazon falls into all six of those. And some companies may only do one, and that's what separates them from everyone else. Some may do all six. And there's companies that I represent in the book that could have been all six, but they're just great examples of one particular area. But think about what Amazon's done. Just way back in the day when they started, they used to sell books. That's it. They just sold books. And they competed against brick and mortar booksellers, your local bookstore, a chain of bookstores. The difference was they're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All you'd have to do is go online and go to their website. They're always open. They have a larger selection because their warehouse, it's not like you're confined to.
Yeah, it's not shelf space.
Yeah. And then, you know, from the standpoint of technology, well, they were one of the early, really good online shopping experiences. And as they started to make things more convenient, what did they do? Hey, how about this one click where you know, one click purchase, you decide what you want. One, you're already in the system. Why do you have to fill out everything all over again? Just one click and you get the confirmation it's on its way, or it's the item's being ordered. And, you know, I can go on and on about it. They deliver. That's one of the concepts. Accessibility, as I mentioned, open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Here's a cool technology. There's something called the dash button. Are you familiar with the dash button?
No.
So this is the coolest thing, if you think about it. When you decide you want to buy something from Amazon, you still have to go online, find your item, and decide to buy it. But what if you buy something over and over again? They actually have hundreds of what they call dash buttons. They look like little doorbells, and they send these to you, and you hook it up to your Wi-Fi. Very easy to do. Literally takes moments. And let's say you are in where you wash your clothes, and the washing machine is there, and you use Tide or Cheer or whatever. It doesn't matter. They actually have a dash button that's linked directly to that product. So you put this little doorbell-looking device. It's got a little sticker on it. You stick it to the back of the washing machine, and you're running out of washing machine detergent. You just push the button, and guess what? It shows up the next day or 2 days later. You don't even have to open your computer anymore to buy online. It's crazy.
It's amazing to me what they're doing. And I think what I find so fascinating about Amazon is not only do they make it easier, better, but they do it in big leaps, not just incremental. So to your point about the one click, it wasn't like I just went from I have to fill out everything over and over again to I fill out some of my information, it remembers me, but I have to fill out the credit card. They went from I fill it out over and over again to one click. Like they do incredible leaps, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's done. And now they have a really cool technology with their Amazon Go store.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the Go store? I am, yeah.
Yeah, you just walk in and pick up what you want and walk out. Now, you do have to let them know you're in the store, although they are going to be able to eventually. I still think there's a security issue, but right now you have to open up your app and scan as you walk in so they know you're in the store. But eventually they'll just know you're in there because they'll identify you based on your cell phone. But like I say, security, what if somebody grabs my cell phone, goes in, buys or walks out with a bunch of items? I'm going to get charged, right?
Yeah.
They'll figure that out, I'm sure.
Oh, that's they easy. Will. Yeah, but that's easy stuff.
They're scaling that to bigger places. So it's no longer just a small convenience store. They're trying it out at Whole Foods. And people are saying, well, I'm concerned. What about the Whole Foods experience? That's not going to change. You're still going to go to the meat counter and talk to the butcher, or the seafood counter, and get your help. It's just, and they're going to hand you something, and perhaps they're going to scan it or whatever when they hand it to you. But you're not going to have to go to a cash register anymore. You're not going to have to wait in line. And that's the one thing, if you want to save somebody time, don't make them wait in line.
Yeah. You know, have you, so I don't know if you saw the article or video, I guess it was on CNN. I was looking this morning about the biometric scanning at the airport that they're testing out in, is it Jacksonville, maybe? Delta is. So it's supposed to save passengers 9 minutes. You don't need to scan or do any of that stuff with your passport in your bag. You just, it's all biometrically driven and you go right on through. And in fact, interestingly, I saw it this morning. So if you haven't seen it, I'll send you the link, but it's that same kind of thing of how can we use technology to drive extreme convenience, really, in this case, because we're going from incredible lines and frustration to you just zip on, you look at something for a few seconds and then you're through.
Right. And that's the whole thing. It saves you time. Now, I'll tell you a very interesting innovation story. The basic details are this. The airport in Houston, people were landing and they were getting off the plane and they were going to the baggage carousel and were complaining about how long it took to get their baggage. So what did the airport do?
So I know this story, so I won't answer.
Yeah, I know.
Isn't
it a great
innovation? I know, it's so good. So you keep going.
No, I mean, I'm just going to cut to the punch. You know, people think, oh, let's figure out ways to shorten how long it takes to get the bags. No, give them a longer walk to the baggage carousel.
Isn't that the best? Here's what I love about that story too, by the way, is to me, that's a great example of thinking differently about your challenge. So, the obvious answer is speed up bags, of course.
Right.
The not obvious answer is slow down the people. And that's what made, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what made the difference in the customer service feedback too. It wasn't the speeding up the bags. That didn't do anything.
Right. And you know what was really cool is when they slowed the people down, nobody complained about how long it took to get to
yourself. It also shows you what we care about. We're okay lollygagging as we go and looking at shops. We're not okay standing around at the carousel.
Exactly.
Simple.
Yeah.
So let's dig into your book. So my first question for you is, why disruption and loyalty together in the subtitle? I thought that was interesting.
So disruption is this. Let's talk about convenience in general first, and that is you can have a good customer experience. You've got great service. You've got a great product that works. This happened about maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago when I was working with an editor on another book, and he says, Shep, I notice all these companies you write about. Why do you write about these companies? And I said, well, you know, I gave all these reasons, and then I said, but there's one reason that I didn't realize until I'm looking at them all together. They're all just easier to do business with than everyone else.
Yeah.
I wonder if anybody's ever written a book about being easy, you know, to do business with. And that's what happened. The convenience revolution was born. So it, number one, disrupts competition because anything you can do that's different than your competitor gives you an edge. And one of the things that can make you different is, hey, they're just easier. Okay. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Number two, when you create, you know, when you are easy and it's consistent and predictable, what happens? People want to come back and get more. That's what creates loyalty.
You know, I love them together because I think we talk a lot about disrupting the marketplace, disrupting your competition, but we don't talk a lot about once you disrupt, how do you keep people?
Yeah. So you keep people by being consistent. The predictive and consistent experience is what brings people back. What you want is people to say the word always in front of something good. You know what? They're always so friendly. They're always so knowledgeable. They're always so helpful. And then even when there's a problem, I know I can always count on them. If you use that word always followed by something positive, that's what creates that consistency. And that, by the way, leads to trust. Confidence, actually. And then confidence leads to trust. Trust leads to loyalty. And as we talk about loyalty, and this is a little off topic, but I think it's important just to mention one thing. And that is everybody thinks about loyalty as a lifetime. Stop thinking about it as a lifetime. Thinking about it is like, what am I doing right now to make sure the person comes back next time? And if every time you're focused on the next time, it eventually turns into every time, which is a lifetime. So that's the key. Consistency right now. If I if I break that consistency, if I break that trust that I've created, I can rebound from it if I do it right now to make sure that that customer says, you know what, even when there's a problem, I know, as I mentioned a moment ago, they can always, they'll always take care of it. I can always count on them. So, and disrupting competition, I actually was very careful because I could have said convenience disrupts entire industries because it does.
Yeah.
There's companies out there that just got better than everyone else and destroyed the industry.
Oh, like Uber.
Exactly. Yeah. Uber is my number one case study for the reducing friction category, which is the first of the six principles.
So let's talk a little bit. I know there's six in there. There are two that I wanted to pull out. And if there's another one that you want to, let's obviously go for it. But the first one I actually wanted to talk about was reducing friction. Because that to me is, it is fascinating to me when I think even about my own experience and just who I, you know, choose to be a customer of and who I don't. The minute there's a moment of friction, I walk away because my expectations are so high now. And because I compare you, Shep, to Zappos and Disney and the coffee shop down the street. Whatever right. experiences I have, that's your competitive set. So talk to us a little bit about reducing friction. And I mean, I think we know why it's so important. I think we all can just feel it personally. But what do we do about that?
Yeah. And by the way, you said something really important. Customers don't compare you to your competitor anymore. They compare you to the best service they've received from anyone. Zappos, Amazon,
doesn't even matter
the guy
anymore.
Down the street who just sold you a pair of tennis shoes for $25. They were on sale. They're the perfect shoes. He took time and he was, why can't everybody else be as great as that guy? Right.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so I think that's important. So let's talk about this reducing friction. So I don't know where you live in Colorado, but I would imagine that prior to Uber, if you wanted to get a taxi cab, you probably from your home, did you walk out and there was somebody on the street?
Shep, it's kind of funny that you say that because I moved here from New York City.
Well,
and in New York City,
exactly.
You just walk out and you put your hand up and within a couple seconds for a while there anyway, a taxi's there. And if it's a rainy night, it takes a little while and you got to kind of fight for curb space. And then I moved to Denver and I got super pissed because you have to call for a taxi here unless you're down like in the downtown area.
Right.
You actually had to call and plan. And I was like, that to me was the biggest friction right there. So in Denver, you had to call and then you had to hope that like the right one came up and nobody got it ahead of you like accidentally because they didn't know who you were. And oh my God, I thought it was a cluster. The only place you could get it consistently was at the airport.
Right. So here's what happens. You have to pick up the phone and call. And then they say, the driver will be there in 20 minutes. And then 20 minutes later, you're going, is the driver really going to be here in 20 minutes? And you call back. And the dispatcher says, he's on his way. He'll be there in 5 minutes. Well, that would have been, should have called you 15 minutes. I don't know. But here's the point. That driver shows up and you get in and you don't know the driver. The driver doesn't know you. And the driver asks you a question. Where are you going?
Yeah.
And then you tell the driver and then you get there and then the meter says how much you owe and you pay and then you get out.
Which is like 10 minutes at the end too.
Right. It's like the friction of reaching into your pocket and pulling out money or a credit card or whatever. It's like, oh, but Uber eliminated everything related to that friction, you know, that friction, full of friction experience. They created the frictionless, friction-free experience. And you just look at your phone and you say, okay, I could tell there's six drivers within 10 minutes of me. And you type in two or three letters of where you're going and it auto-populates quite often because it knows everything. It's like, it does you. And now you know how far and how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, and you know that they're going to take the best way there because they're using the map. It's not even based on what they think.
Yeah, it's flat rated. You know, even if they decide to go off map, they may not get paid for it. So they're going to do their best to get you there. And when they do show up, and by the way, you can watch them on your little phone screen coming to you so you know they're almost there. It reduces that anxiety. And then you get in, the person says, hello, whoever, you know, they mention your name of the passenger. And then you get there, you just walk out. You don't have to.
It's the beautiful.
The only friction that they have not yet figured out is the time in the car.
Right. If we could just go back to some, you know, Star Trek teleporting,
exactly.
That would be fantastic.
Scotty,
you know, it's the taxi thing is so interesting to me. this was a couple years ago now when Uber was really just coming on the scene. I was having a conversation with someone from a taxi association because, you know, as you and I know as keynoters, there's associations for everything.
Right. And I've spoken at those meetings.
Yeah. So he was sharing with me how the big challenge they have and the thing that they're trying to solve, the thing they're spending their time solving is how do we make more money, more revenue per taxi? So that's where they came up with the solutions of, you know, the little tents on top of the cabs and the screens in the back that tell you the latest restaurants and whatever. And I remember thinking to myself, you are having the wrong conversation. The conversation you need to be having is, what are we going to do to reduce friction? Because Uber's done it. And they had, you know, they weren't in every city yet. They were just coming up. And I asked him about it. I said, what about this thing called Uber? And he said, oh, we're not. That's, you know, very few people are going to use that. Who wants to get into a car with a stranger? I was like, okay, we'll see. But they were having the wrong – I was always been fascinated by that conversation because they were really asking the wrong questions to get to that customer service that ultimately led to that experience. And then Uber just took it.
Yep. And they not only disrupted a competitor, they disrupted an entire industry.
Yeah. Well, now they're, you know, you've got Uber Health is I just had a conversation or just did some work with some people in healthcare. They're talking about the Amazonification of healthcare and Uber and what it's doing to healthcare. And it's fascinating, really. So to your going back to your book, though, and your point, reducing friction is a big place to innovate and focus customer service on.
Right. Now, I'll bet you being in Denver – are a member of CLEAR.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And TSA.
I knew that. We travel for a living, and people don't know what CLEAR is. But if you think of TSA, you know, you've got your regular line for people going through security at an airport, and then you've got the TSA line that is typically much shorter, and you don't have to take off your shoes and take things out of your bag. That's reducing friction. And then along came CLEAR, and for a little bit more money, you can spend your money to get and you talked about biometrics earlier. They use fingerprinting. They actually have your retinal scan in there too. I don't know if you remember when you signed up.
Yep.
Because that's coming as well. And now they know who you are and they just walk you in front of everybody. And, you know, I used to feel really bad about it, but not anymore.
No. And do you do this, Shep? This is what I do. I come around the corner. You've been to DIA many times, so you know, right? You come around the corner and I look. And TSA has now gotten really busy. But I look at both. Say, which one has the least friction? Ah, it's almost always CLEAR in Denver.
Right.
I go to CLEAR and there's someone to talk to and it's more convenient. Like it's just a win-win.
Yep. And so it's a better experience overall from the service you receive, but also the conveniences it saves you time. And if you add up those minutes that it saves you, boy, at the end of the year, you go, wow, I got 4 hours or 8 hours of my life that, you know, back that I didn't have to wait in line. So reducing friction.
It's fantastic. CLEAR is a great example of that. So talk to me about its principle 4, I believe, subscription, because I will tell you, I looked at my credit card statement the other day and was like, my God, I have a lot of subscriptions.
Well, people think of subscription typically as that newspaper or magazine that they subscribe to. But what's happened over the years is that companies have figured out a way to create a subscription model so that you pay by the month for something. And you all of a sudden, yes, you realize, you know, I spend $2,000 a month in subscriptions. What am I getting?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what you're getting. You know, like today, I just got hit for my membership to the Dollar Shave Club. That's a subscription.
Love Dollar Shave Club. I have that too. I love them.
So every month my blades show up, and it used to be I had to go to the store to get it. And but I use Netflix as a prime example of a great company that took renting video and turned it into not just a subscription model, but a convenient subscription model. Because eventually Blockbuster years ago, by the way, I believe there's one Blockbuster left in the whole world.
Yes, and they're closing.
Are they going to close?
I just heard the news, unless I heard wrong. I'm pretty sure because they had all the artifacts too.
The last one just closed, like within the last few months. And there's one left.
Maybe I'm mixing.
I think it's in Hawaii or somewhere. But anyway, what happened is Blockbuster got smart and said, you know what? Rather than have people pay every single time, let's just give $20 a month. You come and get all the movies you want. Just don't bring them back late.
Yeah.
Or else. And so along comes Netflix and they eliminate some of the friction. Well, number one, you don't need to worry about bringing them back late. And by the way, in the early days, there wasn't streaming on video. So they actually said, hey, what are the three movies or shows you want to watch? We'll send you three of those to start with. create your queue, and here's a self-addressed, pre-stamped envelope for you to drop the DVD back in and send it back. You know, just drop it in your mailbox. We're going to make this as easy as possible. And then along came, you know, better bandwidth on the internet, and next thing you know, they are going streaming. By the way, they still have several million customers that don't have the bandwidth for streaming video, so they still take care of those people.
Oh, really?
With DVDs. Yeah, they obviously don't have the same selection.
Yeah,
but
interesting.
They're still
though.
Wanting to take care of these people, which I love that about Netflix. But Netflix really they destroyed a competitor.
Yeah,
and
badly.
They did it with the subscription model and being ultra and uber convenient. Good. I got Uber back in there again.
Well, and it really is killing. I'm correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming it's killing Redbox and some of those other ones that tried to say, let's be where people are, which makes sense in theory, except for your competition is right at their laptop.
Right. But before there was streaming, the Redbox was still pretty powerful. It's where, and by the way, what a great model. And it lasted for a while. And trust me, somebody's going to come along and disrupt Netflix, or Netflix is going to see it coming and figure out a way to either match, if not beat it.
You know, what I love about the examples you're giving is they're across vast industries, which just kind of, I think, reinforces the importance of convenience and innovation inside business, regardless of what industry you're in. Because I don't know if you hear this, but sometimes I'll hear, oh, well, it matters in, you know, consumer goods, because those are very sexy categories, but it matters everywhere.
Yeah. Razor blades, consumer goods. Chewy.com is for dog food.
Yeah.
But how about business? Do you know how much money software companies are making as a result of selling B2B?
The SaaS model, SaaS, whatever it is.
Right. Yeah. Software as a service. Because here's what would happen. And I'm guilty of this. I mean, I'm not really guilty because I didn't do anything wrong. But this is what the software companies are trying to avoid. I buy a software package. Maybe I pay $400 for it. It's a single user license. And I buy it. And then the next year, the new model comes out or the new version. And this one's working fine for me. 3 or 4 years later is when I decide to upgrade. And what they said is, let's not even make that an option anymore. Let's make this real easy. Rather than charging me $400, let's just charge the customer like $15 a month, $20 a month. And then they'll always get the updates because we'll just constantly keep them in because they're subscribing. It's totally different.
Yeah.
And Microsoft did it. Salesforce did it. All these software companies are doing it.
Yeah.
And guess what? Now you can subscribe to a car instead of leasing a car, renting a car, or owning a car.
I mean, how brilliant is that? You know, I also do subscription for my clothes. They send me a box. I try it on. I keep what I want. I send back what I don't want. I don't even go to the store to go shopping for clothes.
Another disruptor.
I know. Which, if when I say it out loud, it makes me sound lazy. But the reality is I have better ways to spend my time than to do that. So
so that's what happens. The smart people, it's not like, you know, and I did this research paper. Actually, I didn't. You know, you probably know Josh Packard from out there in Colorado. Yeah. So I commissioned his company, which does research. And I said, I need to prove, you know, I need proof of concept here. And what's really interesting is he gave me two versions. He gave me proof of concept on the social level, which is when people, you know, when you save somebody time, hence convenience, often, if not almost all of the time, it's about time saving. Okay. What do they do with that time? Well, they want to spend more time with family. They want to spend more time relaxing. They want to spend more time doing things that are non-business. But in business, if you save somebody time, they could become more productive.
Yeah.
So he gave me both sides of it. And it was really fascinating that, this is what people are doing when you are more convenient. That's why they gravitate toward the more convenient companies.
So for launch readers out there listening, really go pick up the book. The link will be in the show notes, but it really is a fantastic book. And really insightful. And as Shep and I were just talking about, the principles in this book apply to any industry because we're all being disrupted and we're all being compared to Amazon and Uber and the guy selling me coffee down the street. So go get it. I'm curious in writing this book, if there were any insights or lessons that surprised you.
I think what surprised me is as I got into my research, I found hundreds of companies that I could write about. And I just was blown away by the innovation. There's a company and they're in the book. It's called Monoprix. And I get the two companies confused. But imagine this, that do you remember the ice cream truck that came down the street when you were a kid that sold you ice cream?
I mean, not only do I remember it, but if you'd like me to recite Eddie Murphy's skit on it, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to age myself a little bit.
Right, right. I mean, you always knew at 2 o'clock, the
so
ice cream.
So exciting.
Right. Well, there is now a company that has a convenience store on wheels. Now, what's cool is you can pre-order online what you want. And this store, which is basically like a big, huge, you know, recreational vehicle, rides around and at predetermined times will be at the same place every day. And it goes like all day and all night. So, you know, but here's what's really cool is you walk on and there's no driver. There's nobody on there. It's all you pick up what you want and you walk out, just like the Amazon Go pre-order. How cool is that concept?
And I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. So I know there are going to be companies that are in the book that will not be around here a year from now or even 5 or 10 years from now. Hey, In Search of Excellence, which was some, you know, 50 great companies that were written about, the best 50 companies at the time, half of them aren't even here anymore.
I know. Same with Good to Great. It's the same thing. But I think that they're like, even that example that you were just giving us, this mobile convenience store, I think they're great stepping stones and lessons of where it's headed. And the thing that I would caution the few of you out there that are doing it, and I'm guilty of this too, where we look at stuff like that and we go, that's just a blip. That'll never last. Here's all the reasons why, right? That'll never work. It's where we're headed overall. And I think we need to look at the patterns and the trends, not just, you know, not just that, oh, a convenience store on wheels, that'd never fly in my neighborhood. Maybe, maybe not. But there's something bigger happening.
Yep, there's a byproduct. Think about all the innovation and inventions that happened when they started the space program.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't just about sending a man to the moon.
Well, and they talk about, you know, Google Glasses was a failure, but it's not. It was a stepping stone to a lot of other things that happened later.
Mm-hmm.
That were maybe not directly correlated, but they were an output of trying something like that.
Right. And you've got to be bold. And we really have to appreciate the companies that are big and bold and step up and try things. One of the chapters in the book is toward the end when you have to know when to stop trying to be convenient. And we use Jeff Bezos over at Amazon as an example, is he knows that, hey, when it's failing, get out of it quick.
Yeah.
You know, you can try and try and try, but don't let it put you out of business.
So I'm curious, just to flip it for a second, and a personal experience would be good here too, but is there someone, not to throw anyone in particular on the bus, you can leave names out of it, I guess, who's not doing it right? Because I feel like I have those experiences, and I have one in particular that I'm thinking of, but those really stick with you, the ones where you think, if you could figure this out, I'd be back.
Right. Well, how about banks? In general, bankers' hours are not convenient to the typical public.
I can't even get there in working hours. I don't know who they're kidding.
Right, which is why I use Huntington Bank as a key, you know, player in this book, because they decided, let's stay open later and be open on Saturdays and disrupt the people that aren't. How about the car dealerships whose service departments close at 5 or 5:30?
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's like, I need to be able to get by there after work to pick up my car. And by the way, I have dealerships that say, well, what are we supposed to do? I said, it's real easy. Shut down the service bays, but leave a person there to take a credit card and say, here are your keys.
Have you heard of somebody, a different guest told me about this company. I think it's called Tread. And just your car dealerships made me think of this. Most of us now, let's face it, we've done 90% of the research online. We know basically what we're looking for when we go to the dealership. Mm-hmm. They now bring the car to you. So you kind of work with them to find the top 3 or 4 cars you want to test drive, and they bring the car to you.
Yeah.
So no more even going to the dealership.
Has created that model, and they will not only bring the car to you within a certain demographic, everything's done online. It's really cool, and they guarantee you're going to be happy. And if you're not happy, they have a amount of time they'll come and take your car back. But if you're far enough away, they send you an airline ticket to come and get your car as part of the deal.
Oh, that's fantastic! I'm just going to do that just so I can experience that.
Well, you want to know what you want to experience. Is you want to experience when you go to there, it's a gimmick, but I think it's their marketing piece, is they created a vending machine that's like 5 stories tall, and it has 5 cars or 4 cars on each
floor.
That's
awesome.
And you come in and you take this large token, you put it in a big point slot, and you see your car circling around and dropping down, and then it spits it out and you drive away.
That's the best. Really cool. And what a great way to make the experience not just convenient, but fun too.
Yeah. It makes you stand out. You know, I just recently wrote an article about, don't just, you know, try to be better than your competition.
Yeah.
different than your competition.
Yeah, I talk about that a lot in innovation, because the challenge with better, and I'm curious from your perspective too, is from mine anyway, is that someone can outbetter you tomorrow. It's easier to get a little bit faster, a little bit smoother, you know, be open a little bit later. You got to do a little more than that.
Well, I believe better is better as long as you keep getting better.
Yeah, I think it's a challenge, because I think you see it all the time, right? Like one blade, two blades, three blades, just going back to razors. For people out there who are like, what is she talking about, blades? Like, you have to do it different.
Yeah, I know. And you're right. And this, you know, I do buy the executive four blade or five.
Pivot head, titanium steel.
Yeah. But remember what Bill Gates said about the speed and power of computers?
No.
Something like, you know, I don't know computers, like, you know, nobody's ever going to need more than 256K or whatever.
In the meantime, I've got like 50 devices going at once. I'm sucking
exactly.
up all the bandwidth.
You know, it's going to need more than that. And by the way, he said at the time, he said that, but he also recognized we got to keep pushing the envelope. Yeah. And because maybe I'm wrong. And that was part of it. You know, people are going to say, who is going to, I mean, you can't have a store that doesn't take cash. If you'd have said this 20 years ago, they'd have said, you're crazy.
Oh, it would have been mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Mind-blowing. And the, just the fact that a phone is now my center of the universe and how I manage my life.
And you're not even using the phone for the phone most of the time.
No. And if you know what's funny about that is the phone icon is not in my bottom where I go to most because I don't use it.
Exactly.
So yeah. Were there any of the principles that as you were doing the research, I mean, you've been in this long time, so you know the industry, but were there any of the principles that you thought, oh, I wouldn't have expected that one to be so important?
There's lots of different ways to be convenient. And when I first started, I came up with about 15 plus. And I said, a lot of these are redundant and can be broken down and narrowed down and combined into six. And I was surprised at number one, that I'm sure that a year from now, I'm going to say, boy, I wish I would have put a seventh or an eighth one in there. And this is what it is, because I haven't even thought about it. And it may not even be invented yet. But as of now, these six ideas are common sense, but it's so hard to scale common sense.
Yeah.
But once it is done that way, I mean, and when it becomes common, customers appreciate it. So I think I was surprised at how many companies aren't doing the six ideas that are in this book.
Oh, do you think it's because they think of it as hard? It takes change. Why would they not?
I just don't think they think about it, period. They're not customer focused enough. Mm. They look at their competition and that's who they're benchmarking against.
Yeah.
They're not thinking about, you know, gosh, what can I do that this company's doing outside of my industry altogether? This is why I love doing business with them. Can I bring some of that into what we do here?
Yeah, I love companies that really look at how do their customers and the brands and the businesses that they experience, how do we think about that? Because that is, it opens up your universe of possibilities.
So, right, you know, there are some really cool changes made. So Amazon has their Prime membership and you pay for it and then you get free shipping.
Yeah.
So Walmart comes along and says, we're going to give you free shipping and you don't even have to be a member, but you do have to spend $35.
Yeah.
Then Target comes along and says, you know what? We don't even care if you spend $35. It could be a dollar. We'll still ship it to you. And they figured out how to make this work, hopefully, so that they don't lose, you know, a ton of money. But what happens is these companies are just trying to be better than the next company.
Yeah.
But in the process, they're making it better for everyone, because eventually Amazon, by the way, Amazon's already figured it out. People aren't going to pay us money just for free shipping. We have
right.
to give them a lot more,
yeah.
which is why they have the Amazon Prime movies and music and other really value adds that they came up with. So it's not just free shipping. But all this competition is good, because as one gets better, others, you know, try to at least match. And what did they say? The rising tide
lifts all boats.
Yeah,
I never say it right, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, something like that. But it does. And I think for the customer, it's really good when innovative companies figure out better ways of doing things, more competitive, and even different ways for others to try to match and make it better.
I think you're 100% right. I think everybody benefits from the competition, and everybody benefits from the fact that the competition is such an open playing field, kind of as we were talking about earlier. And I really, just for launch readers, to loop it back to Shep, what you were saying in the beginning about it being a philosophy and a mindset and kind of the way you do business. I think those are the companies that are going to succeed because, you know, I know we've all heard the phrase the customer is king, but it really is about that exceptional customer service at the end of the day. Like, to your point, what did you say, that the ends haven't changed, the middle has?
Right. Everything in the middle has. Everybody, yeah. You start out with a problem, a question, an issue, just need a little help. And at the end, you just want to be happy, and how we get there, that's really what matters.
So before I ask you the last question, where can people go to connect, learn more about you?
Sure. Just go to hyken.com, H-Y-K-E-N.com, and you'll learn all about me. And there's information about the book. Every week I send out a newsletter that's just a great tip on customer service. So sign up for that. And that's where you find me.
And I'll say you have a great YouTube channel too, which I think is Shep TV. Is that right?
Shep TV. Yeah. Shep.TV.
You have great videos.
Shep.TV.com, whatever's easiest to get to.
Yeah.
However you remember.
In doing my research, I went and watched a bunch of videos. They were fantastic.
Thank you.
So last question is, what's the one piece of advice you have for launch readers out there trying to disrupt and create loyalty?
Sure. I would suggest that you take a look at your process. Do the map that we talked about earlier in an interview. Yeah. And that is, identify every single touch point that your customer has, and then look at what the impact points are behind the scenes. Get everybody involved in delivering a better experience. Practice service creativity on each one of those points, internally as well as those top touch point moments that the customer has, and figure out ways to make them better. Innovate.
Launch readers out there, I challenge you to do it with me, because I, as you were talking, Shep, I was thinking about this one. We have this team innovation assessment that teams take, and then, you know, learn how to build a high performance team and be more innovative together. But we've been having this funny friction where smaller teams will call us about wanting it, and then we'll send them the link to go purchase it. Super simple, but they're not following through. So something in our, we have friction somewhere in our system. So I'm going to go do this customer map and figure out all the points. I would challenge launch readers out there to do the same, because as you were talking earlier, Shep, I was like, oh my God, this is exactly what I need to do to figure out what our problem is in this one area.
Well, that's perfect. And I'm glad at least one person's listening and going to do something about it.
There'll be thousands listening. And my challenge to them is to go actually do something about it, because I do think I've done things like this in the past. It's been a long time, but I do think that it is such a simple way to really realize from point A to point Z, what really happens and how important every step is, and what you can, where you can actually make some adjustments, to your point, to get a little bit better and a little bit better and create a much better experience at the end.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad. Thanks for having me on your show. This has been an amazing conversation.
Yeah, we went way over, but it was totally worth it, Shep. Thanks for coming by.
Well, thank you.
I know, right? Wasn't that fantastic? I feel like I say that every time because they're all good. And frankly, I wouldn't release it if it wasn't good. All right. Which principle that Shep talked about are you going to explore? I'm actually fascinated by the subscription one. It does seem like everything's headed that way. And I love it and hate it at the same time. But wow, what an interesting business model and principle. I got a lot out of that interview. I'm pretty sure you did too. Let me know what it was. And if, you know, the way Shep talked about innovation, the way he looked at the world, his kind of futuristic kind of living in Tomorrowland, always 10 steps ahead, or his collaborative side of kind of pulling disparate pieces and ideas together to form innovation really spoke to you, you might be a futuristic collaborative as well. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to our website, go to launchroot.com, GOTOlaunchroot.com, and I want you to click on Take Assessment, and I want you to discover if you are a futuristic collaborative, or if the other seven triggers come together to create your unique archetype. I think I got the math right. There's 9 triggers total, and it's the combination of the top two that create your unique innovator archetype. I'm an experiential risk taker. So maybe if the way I speak resonates with you, you could be a little bit like me too. We're all unique. That's what's cool about it. Okay, Tamara out.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.